Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's time for Hall of Fame broadcaster Al Bernstein to interact with some of the most fascinating big-name guests from the world of boxing and well beyond. Here's Al.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the show. On this edition, we will get a chance to talk to Leonard Ellerbe, who is the CEO of Mayweather Promotions, the company he founded with Floyd Mayweather. It's a company that is promoting a number of major figures in the sport of boxing, including, of course, Gervonta Davis, who just recently had his major fight with Mario Barrios up at 140 pounds after Davis had won titles at 130 and 135 pounds. So we had a chance to talk to Leonard about the company, about his history with Floyd Mayweather, and other matters about boxing. Here it is. Leonard, we're not long after what was a pretty extraordinary event in Atlanta featuring Gervonta Davis, of course, the star of your Mayweather Promotions stable, in which he moved up to 140 and beat Mario Barrios in front of a huge crowd in Atlanta. One of the stories about that is, in fact, that huge crowd in Atlanta, a city that was never really a boxing city that much. He has tapped into something special there, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. He's been able to have a connection with this younger generation. I mean, you know, this younger generation, they've, especially in the urban areas, they've been to a lot of similar things that he's experienced, you know, as a kid growing up.
Right.
Look, and he's a very, very relatable young man. Again, he's a guy that, you know, the fans feel, especially the kids, you know, coming from the poverty-stricken areas, he's someone that they can reach out and touch. You know, he's in the neighborhoods with the kids, whether it's playing basketball or, you know, at the rec centers. Or, mm-hmm. you know, and he's very active in his community. But just overall, you know, even with when it comes to the artists, you know, some of the top artists in pop culture,
right?
He has relationships with, you know, and it's all about him being able to connect and his fighting style. His fighting style is because what oftentimes has gotten kind of lost in boxing. Boxing is a great form of entertainment, you know, and he's brought that excitement back that I think that has been missing from the sport where he's must-see TV. And he's been able to have ability to connect with the fans and his base is just growing and growing each and every fight.
Yeah, he's created a lot of exciting moments. And you hit on the fact that, and Mauro pointed this out on the broadcast, about how his connection with the hip-hop community and a lot of the artists that you talked about have kind of paved the way for him to kind of gain this popularity.
Yeah, it definitely has. And also it helps having Floyd Mayweather you know, right by your side.
Yeah, that's true. That does not hurt.
Major impact, you know, on Tank's success. And I can't overstate that enough, because obviously with Floyd being a mainstream mega star, and Floyd gave him the actual stamp, you know, it's really, really has impacted his star power, you know, to go along with all the other things we had mentioned, you know. And I can't say enough about what a wonderful job Calvin Ford has done, you know.
Right. That's true. Calvin is his trainer, who has helped Gervonta kind of grow as a fighter. One of the interesting things in that fight against Barrios, of course, he was moving up in weight, and was that, and he was facing a height and reach disadvantage. Something that kind of also goes under the radar a little bit with Gervonta Davis, and that is that while he is a powerful puncher and he does create these exciting moments, it's not as if he ignores the nuances of boxing, and there are a lot of subtleties that go on in the ring with him that sometimes people don't notice.
Yeah, that's true. Actually, as it relates to skills, Gervonta Davis has just about as much skills as anybody in the entire sport. He's right up there, and I mean that. I mean, his skill set is unbelievable, but he hadn't had to go in his toolbox, because his menacing style, and he puts all kind of mental pressure on these fighters, and he's tough to deal with. You know, he comes in great shape, and he gives the fans exactly what they want to see from the opening bell.
So now he has gone up to 140 and won a very important fight, and he's performed at a high level in three different weight classes, 130, 135, and 140. And now, of course, the world is wondering if some of the fights at 135 that people so badly want to see can be made. I know one of the fights that that people are talking about, he's tweeted about it. You guys have kind of indicated an interest in it, and in fact, I think even negotiated some for it, is Ryan Garcia, also a big puncher, and he brings to the table something as well in this matchup. Is that a fight that you think is makeable?
This is my honest opinion.
What do you think?
I think he'll fight, but Oscar and them don't want to do it. You know, Oscar's a clown, you know, and just today he did a video and said something, just made an ignorant statement about that Tank didn't do over 90,000 buys, something just foolish like that. But again, that's a tactic used to downplay Tank, and nobody's even paying him no attention. Again, I challenged him to a bet, you know, publicly, which I'm sure he'll decline, because again, he just sounds it's foolish. But that, you know, there's always a way you can say that, you know, you don't want to do something. You know, Ryan has publicly said that, you know, hey, he wants to do it. So that's up to Ryan to figure out that part with his promoter, to get his promoter in line. But we're going to continue to do what we need to do, and that's continue to build our young superstar. You know, Tank has become a big-time attraction, and we just continue to look to grow his base and fight in the biggest and best fights that we can for the most money. You know, Tank is he's a bona fide ticket seller. He's the most exciting fighter in the entire sport, and the fans love to see him, you know, in action. And so we're going to, again, I reiterate, Tank's willing to fight any and everybody out there. But, you know, some things are realistic and some things aren't realistic. Like, I'll give you another example. Like, even mentioning the name of the Lopez kid, you can't even have a constructive conversation with someone like that, because he's just delusional. You know, it's like, the kid has never even been, he's never even been the A side in an event. He's never even been the A side in an event. You know, he thinks he's a draw, And he actually isn't. You know, given the time Top Rank, I'm sure we'll try to build him into being that. But that just doesn't happen overnight. You know what I'm saying? He thinks just because they did a rating with the biggest fight that they could possibly make on a network that, you know, has well over 100 million. So it's like when you put it in context of just like, again, the delusion, you know, how delusional him and his dad are, you can't even have a conversation about anything because, again, he actually believes that he's the A side to a situation. And it's just because you have three belts, that don't mean anything. I mean, it means something. It means that you have belts, but Tank don't need belts. Tank don't need belts.
Is a most of the equation about the commerce of it, or is there a way for some of these fights that seem interesting and competitive, is there a way to make them happen to get past the commerce and past the?
Well, I understand the business side of it.
Right.
You know, I understand the business. Anybody Tank fights is going to generate a lot of revenue. Mm. Okay. We don't even know what these guys can do.
Right.
But, I mean, for an example, this is for an example. He went over to Triller, and they had an event at the Marlins Park in Florida. And I think that the venue, I want to say, is 34,000, and they had it scaled down to 20,000.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you know, as of fight week, they hadn't sold 1,800 tickets?
Mm, interesting.
Okay, and then mysteriously, and I'm not saying that the kid didn't come up with, you know, with COVID. I'm not even going to entertain any of that. But
right.
The facts are that he didn't sell any tickets. So nobody knows when did any of these guys bring to the table. You know what I'm saying? So again, you know, it's hard to have a conversation or even entertain any of this delusion. Like even with the Oscar situation, we reached out to them and they told, you know, I put it out there exactly what the conversation was. They're not looking to put Ryan Garcia in a fight with Gervonta Davis. That's not something that they're looking to do.
Okay. So we're and obviously, you know, we're looking forward to his next fight. Gervonta is going to fight this year though, correct?
Most definitely, in a couple months.
And what if you had to guess what weight he would fight at, and maybe it's not a guess, you probably know. What do you think he would
fight?
I
don't know. We'll have a conversation.
Hard to tell. All right.
He has a plethora of options. So, you know, whatever, you know, me, Floyd, Tank, and Al sit down and talk about, you know, we'll come up with, you know.
Okay. Well, he certainly, the Berrios event was exciting and was you know, turned into a fascinating boxing match in addition to all the excitement around the event. You had an interesting one of your Mayweather promotion fighters was involved in a very interesting fight, a great fight actually. Luis Arias, who fought Jared Hurd, former champion at 154 pounds. It was on the undercard of the Floyd Mayweather Paul fight. And it was a fight that, you know, most of us that looked at that fight thought it was going to be an interesting fight. It really looked like it was going to be an interesting fight. You were very adamant that Arias had more than a good chance to win. And in fact, he did win in what I consider one of the fights of the year. What gave you that confidence to know that he was going to perform at that level?
Well, unlike a lot of promoters, I'm actually in the gym with our guys. I'm in the gym, you know, between meetings and everything. I'm in the gym all the time, you know, watching my guys and watching their preparation. So I know firsthand, you know, what they're doing. You know, Floyd checks on them and I do too. So it's like, you know, I'm in the gym when Tank is training. I'm in the gym when Arias is training. All of our guys.
Yeah.
You know, not every day, but I'm in there checking on them consistently. And it's just, you know, welfare checks and, you know, just sure. Noticing the preparation, seeing if they're doing things the right way. Because, you know, it's like they trust my experience and being around at the highest level and understanding what preparation is like. So, you know, I knew firsthand because the work that he had getting ready for her. And one was our youngster that we just signed, Jaleel Hackett. He's one of the top prospects in the sport. And he's only had one fight. But he's going to be an excellent young fighter. And I knew he would be able to push him. And that's just one of the guys. He had three very good sparring partners. Yeah. And those youngsters, they're eager to get in there and prove a point. And they push
him. The sparring at the Mayweather gym is kind of legendary for its ferocity.
Yes, that's so true.
Yeah,
so I was able to witness the preparation, yeah, you know, firsthand, and I was very confident that, you know, that he would get the job done. You know,
he did that.
You know, I told him, don't worry. I told him, don't even worry about the weight. Don't even worry about the weight. If we got to fight him at 160, you're gonna win the fight. You just keep doing what you're doing.
Well, it was a very exciting fight. One of the best of the year. One of the other fighters that you guys promote who is very talented, and I shouldn't say this because I don't want people to think I in any way play favorites, but just as a young man, he's a delightful young man, and that's Angelo Leo at 122-pounder who was a champion, lost his championship in a very exciting fight against Fulton, and came back and got a hard-fought win against a very good opponent. And he seems to me to be the kind of young man that just when he's involved in your promotions, you're kind of rooting extra hard for him to do well.
Yeah, it's you know, me and Floyd are just a little different from maybe some of these other promoters. We're very passionate about our fighters and what we're doing, helping them with their careers. And, you know, so, you know, Angelo Leo, he came to us, you know, a few years ago, and he was homeless.
Yeah, that he was, yeah.
Yeah, sleeping out, you know, living out of his car.
His dad.
He was looking for an opportunity. And we watched the kid work in the gym. And so we gave him an opportunity. And so we pull for the underdogs. You know, that's what we do. That's just something with life. You want to see the guy who hasn't achieved everything as an amateur be able to somehow work his way through things through hard work and dedication and get an opportunity and make the most of that opportunity. Because, you know, a young man like him, he's extremely appreciative, you know, him and his dad, that he's in a great position. You know, he's fighting in a supremely talented division, you know, and you can mix and match and make a ton of great fights for some years.
Arguably one of the top two or three best divisions in boxing.
No doubt about that.
Yeah.
No doubt about that. So we're just really excited about, you know, the future. He's going to have another big opportunity in the fall, you know, in a big fight. So, again, he's earned that, you know, and we just continue to just go, you know.
He's an exciting fighter in the ring as well.
Put him in the best situation to be successful for him and his family.
Yeah. Yeah, his dad, he tells a story about his dad showing him boxing magazines and during that time when they were struggling. And he dreamt of being one of the people that had his picture on one of those boxing magazines. And, of course, that has happened. You, I want to go back to you and Floyd Mayweather have had a long business relationship. But you know what? I want to go back and see if I can get you to tell me the first day you met Floyd Mayweather. Do you remember it? And how did it happen? And what were the circumstances of that?
Yeah, I remember it because we were at Golden Gloves Gym, and I was with Jeff and Roger.
Yeah,
out there and Roger might have been working out. I know I had worked out earlier, and I was just at the gym, And he, you know, he'd been talking about his nephew. His nephew was coming out there. And I want to say it was for the one of Tyson's fights. I'm pretty sure it was. Pretty sure it was. And, you know, Floyd came through. He was, you know, he was just a young man who was flashy and flamboyant, even at that time, like 13 years old. But, you know, he was, you know, he could fight his butt off. And his uncles were, both of his uncles were so proud of him. And that's all he talked about. And then it was just, you know how you just, you meet somebody and you just establish a rapport. And then it was, you know, I've always been very close to both Roger and Jeff. And then, you know, we developed a relationship, you know, when obviously he got ready to turn pro. And it was just like, I started from the bottom, as we say. I did everything, you know, strength and conditioning. I did it all. You know, and we built a relationship and a bond. I'd already had, my master's degree and all that stuff. And, you know, and it just worked out. He gave me an opportunity. I was loyal and, you know, I worked very hard and earned everything that I got.
And you guys started Mayweather Promotions, I think, in 2007. And that was a time when he kind of took it, was able to take more control over his own destiny. And was it, a lot of fighters do that, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Were there early days in forming the promotional company where it was trying and you were like, okay, we need to get over this hurdle or that hurdle? Were there moments of concern?
Always, yeah. Always. And
that's every day, right?
Yeah, that's what it's all about, though. Yeah. Fighting that, you know, it was a tough, long, hard road, and we put in that work. You know, it was 20-hour days, 15 years straight, 7 days a week. Mm. You know, and that's what it was. And you know, that whole middle part of like my life was just what I was doing. You know what I'm saying? It was like, you know, I didn't have no kids, no, you know.
Right.
It was just blinding.
It was a better time for you when you could be laser focused on something like that.
I had suffered through, you know, some terrible family tragedies, you know, and so it just allowed me just to be laser focused and you know, again, that's what it was. It was a tough, long, hard road, you know, and you know, we grinded from the bottom, from the very, very bottom.
People say that you are were instrumental in kind of pushing Floyd to do other things that were a little bit beyond the boundaries of what he had done before to help build his brand. Did you see that as an important thing to have him, whether it was the Dancing with the Stars or other things that he did? Did you see it as important for him to kind of show some other facets?
Yeah, that's, you know, that's what it was. It's not a secret that I got him on Dance with the Stars and WWE. And but my thing was, is that, you know, when you come on the scene, you understand, you look at the landscape of boxing at that particular time. And, you know, you had, you know, the two major power players were Don and Bob at that right. time. You know, Al wasn't even in the business at that moment, at that time. And then, so, you know, me and Al developed a relationship and we became super close and we came up with a plan. And so it was like, and that's what it took, because, you know, you can't do this by yourself, not one person, you know what I mean? Especially at this level.
Right.
You know, it's like, because you have to bounce things off of somebody else and it's just like you got the same goals and everybody's focused on one mission, you know, and Floyd's locked in, we're locked in. And so when you look at the boxing landscape, you have to understand that they're, the boxing purists, the diehard boxing fans, it's only just, it's a smaller group of people who are consistently going to support the sport. Right. And in order to become a boxing star, you just have to kind of captivate that audience right there. And but you can't really are not going to grow beyond that if you're not thinking outside of the box.
Right.
And so, you know, I spent many nights and days and just thinking of ways that Floyd could be able to capture the mainstream audience, because in order to build your brand, you know, and so it was just like, it was just, you know, a lot of creative thinking with just understanding, okay, like the Dancing with the Stars, like, okay, there's over 20 million that are watching per week. Well, sure we'll look an opportunity to get in front of that audience.
Yeah, right.
That's a person that definitely don't follow boxing. And you know, and that was it was a very interesting story about that, because I definitely recall this, like, because, you know, Floyd's always been the dude that's always locked in when it comes to his training. He do not play when it comes to his training. he tells his kids, his family, everybody, like, when he's locked in, especially the closer you get to the fight, he's like, he don't deal with nothing. He just focus. And so it was the Ricky Hatton fight. And so I was talking with my contact and was working through, you know, sharing some information. An opportunity came about, and, you know, we talked about it. Me and Al, we talked about it. Said, this is a great opportunity, you know. And I explained to him, you know, what we were doing and how we would go about it. And it was just being able to, for him to get in front of a different set of eyeballs,
right.
Even came to the media, because we never had access in the, you know, in the boxing world. We just have access to the boxing media. And if you have a big event, you might have the AP and, you know, several other entities, but how would we be able to capture a whole different audience, you know, and be able to tie that into your fights? And that was the first step in doing that. And when I told him about, I said, you know, we're going to do this Dance with the Stars. He was like, well, I'm training for my fight. He said, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing this shit. Excuse me. He's like, I'm not doing that. And I was like, Floyd, look, trust me. This, we're going to do this. And this is going to connect with this. And this is going to connect with that. And then once you do this, this is going to lead to this. And he trusted. And I guarantee went from this to triple what he made. And he was like, he fell in love with the idea of thinking outside the box. And he's a genius within himself, like, you know, just tapping into other markets and becoming friends with billionaires and things of that nature. And he's been great at doing all those kind of things. Floyd is the when it comes to being a marketer, he's the best ever, along with his fight game, you know, right. TV. In both of those worlds. So able to connect those dots with that, it just leapfrogged him into the mainstream world, into conversations, you know, and it just started from there.
It's very-
It took a great team though.
Yeah, you have to work at it, that's for sure, and come up with these ways, as you point out, to get out of the niche boxing coverage and get into something that's more, mainstream, because boxing became more of a niche sport.
Totally.
And, you know, it's always a challenge to try and capture that bigger audience. Before I let you go, give me your feeling about where the sport is now. The product of boxing has been very good, especially this year. And for the last several years, for the most part, you know, boxing doesn't make all the fights people want. That's just the way it is. But boxing has put a good product out there, and it feels like there's a bit of a renaissance happening. Is that the way you look at it?
Totally. Because, again, the evolution of social media, you know, has played a major role with being able to grow the sport to a certain degree, but to create conversations, you know, instantly
right.
about, events that are coming up, and you know, so that's been played a major tool.
And you kind of get past the middleman of the media telling you you can't, you can reach this audience or you can't. It's you reaching them directly.
Yeah, totally. So you know, I think, and you notice that with as it relates to these YouTube fighters and celebrity fights and things of that nature, I think that there's a lane for everything. There are a lot of good fights that are being made. You know, you just have to continue the momentum. I think that Tank has played a major role with creating more excitement for this younger generation. You know what I'm saying? So they are, actually, he has created a following. And especially you look at Atlanta, for an example, like here is a young man that, you know, he's like selling out arenas. You know what I mean? He's selling out arenas with a guy that the base of fans don't even know. They don't even know. You know, so he's been able to have that ability to connect to this younger generation. And I think that's going to kind of lead us, you know, for many, many years, because he gives these fans exactly what they want, and he's going to be the face of boxing, mark my words. You've always been one of the nicest guys that anybody would ever meet in our sport, you know, and I've been a big fan of yours for many years. I can remember when Roger was fighting on ESPN.
Yeah, right.
I fights then. I mean, it's like I've been a fan for many, many years.
I appreciate it.
It's an honor to even be, you know, I'm talking with you now.
Well, I appreciate it. Yeah, those days, and you, of course, a lot of people don't even know that you were an amateur boxer and that you know the sport from the inside out. And those were interesting, great days. And I remember those fights Roger had, exciting fights. You know, both we had some on ESPN, and of course, on a championship level, and it was a lot of fun back then. And the other interesting thing is, you know, I had I got to do a lot of his fights, a lot of Jeff's fights, and then I actually did the very first Floyd Mayweather professional fight, which was out of Texas Station, I think,
with Apodaca.
Yeah, that's right. Oh, good. Yeah, of course, you would know. Yeah. Anyway, I appreciate the comments, and I look forward to continue.
Anytime. You just let me know.
All right. Thanks, Leonard.
Thanks for having me.
This part of the show is brought to you by Showtime, the home of Showtime Championship Boxing and Showbox. So I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Leonard Ellerbe. Played it a little bit close to the vest with the future of Gervonta Davis. I think probably because they aren't 100% sure just what comes next for this young dynamo and certainly one of the major stars in the sport of boxing. Lots of opportunities out there. We'll see which ones come to fruition for him. On this show, we like to do flashbacks where we go back and show you some of the great storytelling that was done by previous guests. And in this instance, we're going to go to Lennox Lewis, the great heavyweight champion, one of the great heavyweights of all time, and have him talk about yet another great heavyweight, Mike Tyson. Lewis and Tyson have had a very long and complicated relationship over the years. And the interesting thing to me is how it started. Lennox explains.
You know, it all started obviously in 1983 at the World Junior Championships in Santo Domingo, when I actually won the tournament, and the Americans said that, hey, you didn't box the best. And I'm like, who's the best? And they said, it's, you know, Mike Tyson, he doesn't like taking planes. His manager, Custom Model, doesn't like taking planes. And me and my trainer at the time, we were saying, well, who is this guy, man? We need to find out who this guy is, because a lot of people didn't want to spar me either.
Yeah, so I'm sure.
We found each other in that sense, and me and my trainer, bless his soul, Arnie Beam, elected to drive up there. We drove up there. We met Custom Auto. We stayed at the house. I met Mike, lovely guy, until we got in the ring. You know, that's when the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde came out in Mike. And, you know, I thought he courted me and sweeted me up, and then tried to beat me up. So it gave me a lesson as well. You know, it's not where you're from, it's where you're at. So I'm in his territory, so I got to be careful. Yeah. And that was then. And then he went off to do his illustrious pro career. And I was still amateurs at the time. So I was focused on amateurs. He was focused on pro. And I didn't know if we were going to actually meet, but when we were sparring at that time, Customado in the last round said, "Mike, don't you do that. You're going to face this man one day." And I'm like, that was always ringing in the back of my head. And I wondered if it would ever come true, and it did. So Customado's words came true.
So some intriguing recollections by Lennox Lewis about the early days he had with Mike Tyson. You can go check that full episode out, of course, along with others on this, our Al Bernstein Unplugged page, and take a look at some of the shows that maybe you've missed or maybe some that you want to revisit. Well, when you look at those shows, you will see my co-host, Trip Mitchell, there asking me the important questions that you have asked on Twitter at Al Bernstein. Let me invite him in now. Hey, Trip, how are you?
I am great, Al, and we've got some great questions this week. But real quick, of the heavyweights that you've had a chance to interview, and we've had Larry Holmes on and Lennox Lewis, who are the best storytellers? Who are the guys who really just regale you with fun stuff?
Oh, that's intriguing. You know, of course, Larry, I thought, actually, Larry is a really good storyteller, and we demonstrated that on the show that we had. And, you know, there was a series of heavyweight champions who weren't super as famous as some others, but Lehman Brewster was a great storyteller. Chris Byrd, who held the heavyweight championship for a little while. They're among a couple of the guys that are very good at talking about boxing and telling some great stories. And the heavyweight division has certainly had its share of that, that's for sure.
No question. Well, let's get to the first one. And this is from Gaston Peters, and he asks, aren't boxers too obsessed with keeping their perfect record with zero losses? In MMA, there are people with multiple losses that are superstars, but in boxing, the idea that a loss is the end of the world. And he goes on from there, but what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's very interesting. You know, I was just having this discussion with Mauro Ranallo, my broadcasting mate on Showtime, who, of course, has done years and years of MMA and continues to do it now on Showtime, doing the Bellator series. And we were talking about this very topic, that we thought that the influence of MMA would make the world of boxing in general less fixated on this idea of being undefeated, which in the last 20 years, boxing has been for sure, 20, 25 years. And it looked like it was starting to take root, but then it's kind of shifting back a little bit to people being so concerned about whether they're undefeated or not. It's one of the things in boxing that I think impedes the sport, because there is nothing wrong with having a loss. You know, the greatest in the past all had losses, with the, you know, notable exception of Rocky Marciano. But in general, everybody loses at some point. Floyd Mayweather did not lose during his long career. And some would suggest that his model is the one that a lot of the current fighters are trying to follow. But it's mostly unrealistic to expect that. And so by being a quote unquote, for marketers and for managers and for promoters, afraid of that, getting that loss and blemishing your record, sometimes great matches are not made. And I think fans are more forgiving than the hierarchy of boxing would understand that they might be about a loss. And I don't, you know, this question referenced the fighters themselves. I'm not sure it's always the fighters. I think a lot of times it's other people as well who are concerned that that loss will somehow create a stigma around a fighter, when in reality, it really doesn't.
Okay, our next question, and this comes from Boxing Profiles. Good morning, how are you? Do you think that Benavidez could win a Canelo fight?
Yeah, David Benavidez against Canelo Alvarez is a fight at 168 that is, I think, the most entertaining fight that could be made at that weight, and I think one of the most entertaining fights that could be made in boxing. Now, interestingly, Benavidez lately has talked about fighting Jermall Charlo, who's down at 160, because he feels that will make the Canelo fight even bigger. I think Benavidez feeling like if he can pad out his resume with a big win like that and maybe build his profile a little more, he thinks he'll get more money when he fights Canelo. Of course, that's presuming he could beat Jermall Charlo. And Jermall, understandably, down to the 160, he's very comfortable at that weight, and he moved up from 154. So he's not under any obligation to go to 168 and fight Benavidez or anyone. But if the Benavidez-Canelo fight should take place, which all boxing fans are hoping, it's a fascinating matchup. Does Benavidez have a chance to beat Canelo? Absolutely. The reason he has a chance to win is because he is so busy. He has one of the most potent offenses of any boxer in the sport. And while I don't know if he can hurt Canelo or knock him out or knock him down, which seems almost impossible, doesn't it? Because Canelo has this iron chin that is really pretty amazing. It doesn't appear that anyone has been able to hurt him. But even if he can't, the fact that Benavidez is such a volume puncher, and the fact that Alvarez sometimes has lulls in his fights where rounds can go by without him punching as much as he maybe should, you could see Benavidez winning rounds from him. Now, the big question will be, can Canelo hurt him, which he might be able to? And of course, if he could, that would upset this whole scenario for Benavidez. If the fight were to go 12 rounds and be decided based on a decision, you have to think that in some ways, well, in a realistic way, Benavidez has a better chance because he's such a volume puncher. But let's be honest, not too many decisions go against Canelo Alvarez in the sport of boxing. You know, he's gotten the benefit of a lot of close decisions. So I think Benavidez certainly has a chance. Would he win? I don't know. I'm absolutely 100% on board with the idea of that fight. Certainly hope it can happen. Well, one thing I'm on board with is our next guest, Rex Chapman, who will be on our next show. And he, of course, is the terrific basketball player from Kentucky, played on the Phoenix Suns, among other teams in the NFL, had a very fine NFL or NBA career, not NFL. He wasn't a football player, an NBA career. And he is the king of Twitter, right? I mean, who doesn't know Rex Chapman that's ever been on Twitter?
Well, Chris, who knows nothing about sports, our producer, director, and grand poopah, said, oh, he's got a big following, and that shocked me.
Yeah, Rex, he's put a lot of effort and time into Twitter. We're going to talk to him about that. We're going to talk to him about his NBA career and his basketball years, and also his life story, which is a kind of a poignant tale. He's very open about issues he had with prescription drugs and opioid addiction, and we'll talk about that and how he rallied back from that to create this excellent life for himself. So our next show, Rex Chapman will be on board here on Al Bernstein Unplugged, and I hope you will join us. We'll see you next time.